This is CliffCentral.com.
Is this thing on? You're listening to The Bounce Show. It's live. Well, not this bit, but it's live on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, lads.
Sorry, scrap that, delete it. CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to it, The Bounce Show, 26th of October. 2017. Yep, you can have those annoying office conversations that there's only so many Thursdays left before Christmas. I do not envy you. Right, so this week we are talking rugby. I've got Mr. JW Kutsia, who is, he's a return guest. Mr. JW is, I said it before, he's one of my favorite followers on Twitter, mostly because he's a rugby man through and through. He understands broadcasting. He is a Bulls fan, so he knows what suffering is about. Plus, he's just not a guy who's scared to share opinions. JW, thanks for coming back.
Ah, thanks. Good to be back. Thanks.
Now, the last time you were here, we had a very in-depth discussion around development in sport, transformation in rugby in particular. And it had a lot of great feedback. People seem to not only like the conversation we're having, but you in general. So thank you for making your time available again today. Wow. End of year tour is basically the next thing we need to look forward to from a Springbok perspective. But we've got the Currie Cup this weekend. We've got the Rugby 2023 World Cup bid, which seems to still be in the headlines. We've got, Alistair Garcia's year in review. We've got what happened in the Rugby Championship. And, of course, the fixtures ahead for end of year. So that is a basic synopsis of what we're going to get through today.
Okay, perfect.
I don't ever have to ask you to kind of prep for something like this because, I mean, it's something that you rattle off on a daily basis. But let's start with the Rugby Championship. So throughout the year, last year, Bok fans were kind of teetering between alcoholism and suicide. Everybody did get to a terrible stage. We saw all the burning jersey videos, Oaks just getting too much safe in their laughters, whatever it was. It was not a good year. This year, however, things turned around. We played, some French fodder came over. We made the most of that. Three very, very comprehensive wins, which then was followed up by two pretty good wins against the Argentinians, a team that has obviously derailed the Boks in past. Greater Boks teams than this one. But then reality kind of came, maybe reality came home after that. Would you say that was a fair kind of synopsis of how the year started for the Boks?
Yeah, it started quite encouragingly. It's the first, and compared to last year, the first five games this year was, we all thought we were up and going, and then that draw in Perth kind of burst our bubble a little. Although now, in retrospect, having seen what Australia have done to New Zealand last weekend, now we know maybe those storms weren't that bad. But then again, some shine off that All Black game in Cape Town where we ran in plus. So it's all still up in the air. Is this a good year or not? I feel it's better than 2016, but I think the next game, the Ireland game on the end of year tour, will decide.
Well, I think if the two of us put Bok jerseys on and ran in a forward direction, it could be better than last year.
To be fair, yes.
But it's a good point you make up. So people, obviously, it was a big come down because that Perth game wasn't so much that it was a draw. It was the nature of the draw. Both teams looked very lackluster. Both teams looked like they were literally playing for second place on the Rugby Championship. They were just it was messy. And then from there, it was another shock loss. Well, I say shock loss, but 57-0. People don't forget about that kind of stuff. And after that match, it was like, maybe 2016 is still kind of with us. It was going back to the drawing board, all the cliches that came with it. But did you feel that, we haven't learned from losses in the past? Did you feel this Rugby Championship gave us an opportunity to actually physically learn from this? And did the team, in your mind, turn around after that loss?
No, they must have. But the difference between that 57-0 game and the Cape Town game was just massive. And not so much of a playing style. We didn't do a lot different other than defend much better.
Yeah.
Be more patient on defense, not run out of numbers as easily. But in terms of attacking game, in terms of forward game, it was just doing what we do, but more focused and more intense. And as you said, the other one was lackluster. In Cape Town, we were really focused and really physical. So we must have learned. If nothing else, we had to set new standards. We had to, from now on in, we will always look back at the Cape Town game and say that is a standard performance. Anything lower than that in terms of energy levels or execution, it's not acceptable.
Well, I think that's what I was kind of getting at here. It's just knowing what this team is capable of. So, again, 2016, we thought, this is just dreadful. Rugby's on the slide. We're in the toilets here. But that game in Cape Town showed what we're capable of. And Brendan Fenter, who's been quite outspoken this year, he's made quite a name for himself on social media because, he's blocking everyone left, right, and center. He said it wasn't particularly a bad performance. It just got out of hand against the All Blacks. And this team isn't so much, it's still a great side. And it was almost like he was alluding to the fact that on another night, this could have been very, very different, with very little difference in playing performance. As you say, Cape Town, same team, same kind of attack, just a far more resolute defense, a lot more structure, and suddenly it was a one-point game rather than a 57-point game. You know, again, then drawing into what the Aussies did with the All Blacks, maybe this team deserves a bit more credit, and again, you keep looking at these big losses and think, well, this team isn't really coming anywhere. Going forward for this end-of-year tour now, what, in your mind, needs to kind of be solidified? You spoke about energy levels and having this as a great bar of where we are. But going forward for this end-of-year tour, what for you are the key takeouts of what this team should be looking to achieve?
I think the big thing with the Springbok team, other than when you measure them against the All Blacks and Australians especially, is we're playing at 75%. Those guys are close to as good as they can be on a good Saturday. And there's a lot to fix about the Springboks at this stage, and we're already competitive. So it's good looking forward.
But when you say 75, I mean, are we talking general fitness here, or do they only have the ability? Is there a handbrake in general that only means no 75?
I think we can definitely do better with selections. We can definitely do better with defensive structure at this stage. Turning, you know, the transitional play between attack and defense, we're still sluggish compared to the other guys. And those are coachable things. We can train them. We can get better at it. The game plan is starting, the attacking game is starting to settle now. We're starting to understand what it is. We're getting width on the ball. We're getting, you know, we're punching in the middle. But what we need is to take that further step now. I'm excited about some of the youngsters in the Currie Cup that came through this year, especially the outside backs. I thought we lacked punch there in the Rugby Championship.
Definitely. We lacked punch, but we had continuity.
Yes. sometimes continuity isn't the best thing. The good thing there is Stanley coming through there. And now that we are getting the ball wide more often than we used to in the past, let's just get guys that can punish people there.
So would it be a fair comment to say, I believe too many Bok coaches in the past have said, look, it's a bit of a process, we need to be patient. Should we be patient on what we've seen so far this year? Like you said, things are coming together. Brendan Fenter says this won't be overnight. This is a process. Alistair Goodsir talks about processes. Can we believe it when they say it this time?
Every coach that loses says that. There's never been a coach that said, I'm taking this team down the dumps. And then all of them do the same thing and say, but look at the All Blacks, and they got all this continuity. But it's easy to have continuity when you're winning.
Exactly.
It's when you're losing. What do you do then? You can't still... I need experience in certain positions, and I want certain combinations to play together. Those are favourites of Alistair to always say. But if it's not working, it's not working. And they're just banging your head against the same rock the whole time. If it's not working, make a plan. And I think this year we've changed quite a bit. The narrative at the start of the season was a lot about the lion's spine, as they call it, the 5, 8, 9, 10, 15. And now are we going to build on their success? And then when that started falling apart in Australia, they're not as enthusiastic about that idea now. So what do they do from here? I think they've come round to the thing that you have to have the best player in every single position, regardless of where he comes from, and that you also can form partnerships at that level. You don't have to take existing partnerships from lower levels and bring them up. Sometimes you can do that. Some guys are just natural fits for each other. But... it's not always necessary, and once we, I think this end of year tour, we'll see. It doesn't really matter where guys come from. Form will be rewarded, I hope, and youth will be rewarded as it normally is after a Currie Cup season, without throwing away what worked for us during the year.
Sure.
It's just what I'd like to see is the outside backs, that midfield partnership that wasn't working always. Maybe the 9-10 combination just sharpen up a little. If not, bring in Andre and just make that big call now. As I say, there's a lot to be fixed, and they're fixable things. We just want to see them fixed now. It's not about being patient anymore. It's not about it's a process anymore. If it's a process, show us progress. Otherwise, that process isn't working.
Show us different elements of the plan. Because another thing from that we're using this now is our benchmark match, that All Black versus Springbok match in Cape Town, is that the forwards that day won. I don't care which way you look at the game, the Springbok forwards dominated that day, and they were incredible. It got to the backs, and then the All Blacks managed to get back into the match a lot. So we spoke about the spine, and we spoke about you saying maybe selections can increase. it's almost like, I feel like it's the worst place to blood new backs is in the Northern Hemisphere. Heavier conditions, a lot more technical, tactical kind of stuff. Would you say that it'd be better to maybe make some bigger calls early season for the box in at home? Or is it, screw it, there's no luxury in timing. If the guys need to change, they change right now.
Yeah, and the end of year tour is normally when we blood players. I know it's maybe a little more difficult.
But that's got to do with injury a lot of the time.
And after K Cup. I know that's where we got Brian O'Banner and, you know, a lot of our great backs. They were blooded as youngsters in Europe in tough conditions. Sink or swim. It's one of those things at the international level. There's, other than those first couple of opening tests in the year, it is never going to be easy matches. It's sure. Never a place that you can feel, okay, now we can put our worst players on the field and they'll still survive. If you want to play at that level, you have to be able to cope with it. And, yeah, bring him in, whether it's raining or sunshine, doesn't matter.
Yeah, you mentioned Andre Pollard. Of course, that'll be something that people aren't always going to argue because Elton Jantjies was such an amazing Super Rugby player because he put a lot of good seasons together for the Lions, and he was a major part of that success of that team the last 2 years. Internationally, well, I wouldn't call him a JP Duminy. Okay, let's go with it. Let's go with JP Duminy. You know there's class there, but it comes to these big, big matches. And he's not performing as much as we would hope for. Is it time that Andre Pollard was given a lot more time, or do you believe in this whole process theory that there's still time for Elton to really prove himself?
No, Elton is a out-and-out case of he's playing the wrong game plan. He's comfortable at the lines, playing a flat game, taking it and playing options off himself. And at the Springboks, he has to be behind the forward parts. So when he gets it, he's very deep and he's got a lot of time, and he's one of those players that, well, when given too much time, he tends to overthink things.
Yeah, and go lateral.
So the moment he's at the lines, he has to run straight at the advantage line, get it there, make a split-second decision, and he's really, really good with that. But at the box, that's never going to happen. So we've given him enough time, seeing if he can settle in that deep again, and he doesn't seem to be able to do that. It's not half the player is.
But it just seems odd that Alistair Coetzee, obviously, you'd think all the coaches at B, the selectors, would notice this kind of stuff. Or is it just, again, hoping for the best because, you know, let's just keep trying with continuity?
Yeah, I think it's also a case of you want to show faith in the players that you have.
Yeah.
And that's often a problem for players or for coaches is they're getting too loyal. And in this case, it might be one of those things, again, he's just showing too much loyalty in the guy. Sometimes you have to make the tough calls. He is our best Super Rugby fly-off, but at international level, he's not cutting it. And make that call.
Well, Andre Pollard, he definitely is a guy that can run to the line. He's the big burly dude, and he showed that just in that sort of 10, 15 minutes against the All Blacks in Cape Town, again, we're using this game as a big reference here, there was impetus there. There was forwards fighting for the ball, retaining the ball, and he would give that go forward. I just think that it's injuries aside, this guy is going to be the future. But then what do you do at scrum off? Because, again, you're working on these combinations, but every scrum off we seem to be putting in the box setup seems to have the two-step then pass strategy. Is it, again, another chance of trying to have a combination? Is Rudy Page going to be as combination as they're both Bulls players? Or is it, again, taking a slightly more left-field approach now?
I think in scrum off, while it's vital, we have to work time before the next World Cup. We have to make a call now which player that we have has the basic skill set there and then has the most potential. A guy like Ross Cronier, great player as he is never going to play any better than he's playing now.
Yeah.
Same thing with Rudy Page. I'm sorry.
It's a good point. I feel a lot of that happened in the back line.
Whereas if you take a youngster like Ivan Tinsel from the Bulls, or even just give Louis Schroeder a shot there because he's got probably the best pass in the country at the moment, and then just make them grow into that role. We did it with our past two great flowers. We put them in as youngsters there when they were unproven at provincial level, and both of them made that step up. You have to do it again, I think.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that. Okay, so just looking, the BOC team is going to be announced this weekend after the Currie Cup final. It's the day after. It's normally after the match, but it'll be the day after this time around.
Yes.
Okay. So just looking at the backs, because I think, again, you know, our forward stocks are pretty good. We've got guys like Francois Lowe who will obviously bolster that from international perspective. What would be the sort of the key inclusions that you're looking for, or what's to say, would you be surprised if you didn't see some of these fresh faces in the box squad this weekend?
My call, what I want to see is the outside backs, as I mentioned earlier, being bolstered, and bolstered by really class, potentially great players.
Well, again, like you say, you're taking these great skill sets, let them develop with those.
Yes. So the guys I'm looking at would be Warwick Holland from the Bulls. It's just potentially such a great player, and just make him live and learn there. Don't keep him at provincial level and let him learn bad habits and have his confidence broken.
Yeah.
Make him great. The Sharks have two great players in Lucanio Arm and Sibuya Nkosi, the big Jonah Loma South African rugby we've got there now. He's unfortunately dislocated his elbow, if I'm not mistaken, over the weekend.
Yeah, over the weekend. He's going to miss the final.
Yeah, which is a... But it's a weird injury. I know. I remember Stefan de Blanche back in the day doing the same thing, dislocating and then playing the next week. So maybe he's still in the running for a box team. I certainly hope so. The sooner we get those type of guys in the team, get them to settle around the camp, let them start fighting, get that internal squad competition going, the better for us.
And just the belief of, like, this is the level where you belong. For so long, I think you can be overlooked, and then you realize that, like, okay, Curry Cup, as you say, you get into bad habits. You become just good enough for this level, and then you will stagnate. So, like, obviously, the Cheetahs right now are playing a very sort of different game. They're playing that Pro 14 thing, so they're away from Curry Cup action. Any of the guys there that you feel that this platform has really, like, helped out in order to make a cause for the Bok jersey?
Yeah, the Cheetahs, not really. No, it's... a lot of players that are just above Pro 14 level. So once they get comfortable and they showed that with that run they had at home, that they're more than good enough to play Pro 14 at least.
Sure.
But there's no one at the Cheetahs that really stands out as a potential world great. You got guys like Captain Swayze, who's he can fill a role when you're running out of numbers in the Springbok squad, but he's never going to be a great, and he's never going to be a regular starter.
Yeah.
And the whole team is like that. I think Raymond Rule shown us that, you know, at international level, when he has guys that can match his pace and his size, then he gets scored in terms of skills. So I would hope to see that the Cheetahs, for once with Pro 14 in European rugby now being a regular thing for them, that they start retaining their squad.
Mm.
And then once they have that base squad going, they'll have a lot of young talent coming through, having to play that second team in Curry Cup. And so it's, at the moment, not great talent there. Well, not world-class talent there, but it'll come.
It's a good point, and you know, you're touching on it a few times here. It's about, like, saying, look, we need to be the best. We need to be that game against the All Blacks all the time. What kind of players is going to hold positions and do it satisfactorily? We need someone who's really, really on the next level. Which brings us to the captaincy issue. Some people think it's an issue. I'm okay with it, really. Warren Whiteley is still with that problematic pelvis, groin area, which is, some people are saying, is because of these Japanese off-seasons, whatever it may be, players get injured. We're not going to go into the science of that. It just happens. Even if it's being retained, some people believe that Siya Kolisi going into the World Cup should be a better call. Do you think, again, this is anything we should really worry about, or is it just we're going to be bitching for the sake of bitching?
I'm very much a Siya Kolisi fan when it comes to captaincy. That is just an amazing guy. And you can see it when you see the guys play and the way the players react to him. And when they're on the field and they go for a scrum, it's not Yevon. Yevon binds and sets in, but Siya goes and taps all the players, shouts at them. So he's already pretty much the leader there. And it helps that him and Yevon are very good friends. Mm. So they bounce off each other and they have a lot of respect for each other. But I think they missed a chance with Siya there. I think going forward, once again, if you say someone has the potential to be a Springbok captain, Siya has the potential to be that and be more. He can be a great Springbok captain.
Well, you always feel like the responsibility will raise his game.
Yes, yeah. And in certain ways it did. He's a far better player this year at international level than he was last year, and it's just that extra responsibility. He seems to thrive on it. Give him a chance, why not?
Yeah, interesting call. Look, I think Ibn Nisbet hasn't particularly done anything wrong. Again, he was in charge of the 57-0 thrashing, and people on the back of that were saying, well, look, you know, there was a lot of heads hanging down underneath the post, but when you're getting a thrashing. I mean, I'm not too sure what a captain's going to say, other than, Oaks, would you please tackle? It would be nice. Get in the game. But yeah, I mean, all in all, it is a decent squad. It's looking good. Of course, the fixtures for the end of year are Ireland, that will be the first match, and then it's France, fourth time this year, then Italy, then Wales. Now, I know that a lot goes into this whole scheduling thing, and when I look at that list, I go, well, okay, we're playing Ireland. I guess that's the highlight, because Wales are Wales. Italy, I know we lost them last time round, so it'd be great to get some revenge, although that seemed like a petty squabble to me. And France, we played them. So it's not a very inspiring end-of-year tour. Do you know, like, the insides of how this happens? Because, again, England and New Zealand don't play. I mean, New Zealand's schedule list is really piss poor. They play Argentina. They played Argentina three times already this year, which is essentially during the Lions tour. So it was their B team that played them. They're playing Australia and Samoa. There's hardly a blockbuster end of year for England at Twickenham. New Zealand, they're playing the Barbarians. That just sounds like a money match to me. They're playing France, they're playing Scotland, they're playing Wales. So it doesn't seem like a very inspiring kind of end to the year fixture-wise here. Does World Rugby literally rotate this on a very sort of fair option, or are they logistically matching teams for teams?
I think what it is, it's an invitation from other teams. If you're not invited, then you can't go.
So do Ireland say, well, look, we would like to play these teams? Does it start like that?
Yes. We've got 3 weekends or 4 weekends in November that we want to host. Who's the available options that we have? Who can tour? And then you actually try and invite the guys to come over. And in this case, the disappointing thing with England is they didn't want either us or New Zealand there. I don't know if they want this to be a building area or building time in the season and going forward into the World Cup, where they want to build confidence rather than be tested.
I was thinking that, but as I was thinking that, I was thinking, well, this is just going to sound like I'm a conspiracy theorist, but that does sound strange. Like, they wouldn't want them right now.
I can't understand why not.
Because I've also heard a side story that New Zealand wanted too much of the gate money. As in, they wanted a 50-50 split for a sold-out Twickenham for the match that every rugby player in the world wants to see and has wanted to see for 2 years now.
Yes, and New Zealand, they don't care if it's a full-out Twickenham or wherever they fill out stadiums. They will fill out stadiums. So for them, they don't worry about that, whether they play England or not. It's England that would want this. But yes, that money story sounds like it could be something worth investigating at least.
It's just a real shame because... like, you have to have best versus the best. And I remember when these end-of-year tours were, England would play literally the Tri-Nations teams back in the day. They would play Australia, South Africa, and New Zealand. And it was such a great series of fixtures because ultimately the Pommers got stuffed by the strong Southern Hemisphere teams. But now it's like this shit show of Samoa and Argentina. I mean, Australia, it's just, if I was an English fan, I would not be happy with this. But again, as you say, there's more choice behind this than we think.
Well, what do you do if you're an England fan? You have to take it up with the RFU, take it up with your club, and your club takes it to them. Yes, I would also not be happy. And what we're seeing less of nowadays is also the Grand Slam tours by the Southern Hemisphere teams. We try and win all the Six Nations teams. And
exactly, that was a real feature.
It seems to be gone, which is great, is the pity. We don't want to see inferior games where you know what the result's going to be beforehand, and it's just a run-out for England, really. They just bag the 3 wins. They're not going to learn much about themselves. They're not going to entertain much, are they? So,
it's a real shame. I think Barbarian teams playing top-class international, also I think it's almost like a waste of a weekend. I mean, they should be playing countries like Argentina or like 7th or 8th rank down. Yeah. They should be playing against Fiji, you know, given when the South Sea Islanders a good stadium with a Barbarians team. Anyways, we need to talk Curry Cup. Now, again, same old. Everyone talks about Curry Cup being a secondary event. It's a waste of time, blah, blah, blah. It needs to be reshaped. I even saw banter on the weekend about the fact that there shouldn't even be a semi-final.
Yeah, it's a point I don't understand.
I don't get this either because people keep forgetting sport is entertainment.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what the thinking about that is. The thinking behind that is there are only 7 teams, and then when the semi-finals come, you only cut 3. So, you know, you still have 4 of the 7 left. So the thinking behind it, what they're trying to say, is that it's not really a measure of excellence. So to have made that semi-final just means you weren't in the bottom 3.
Yeah, exactly.
But that doesn't matter. It's always been thus. A semi-final is a stock standard feature in sport throughout the world. The counter-argument would not be not to have semi-finals. It would be to have a bigger Curry Cup, but we've been there. You know, and then it's really, if you have weaker teams in there, it brings the whole product down. So
yeah.
I'm happy with the format as is. And then I also saw that quieten down after the weekend, after 2 entertaining semi-finals.
Exactly, 2 very good semi-finals. But other people said, well, it was the top 2 teams in the finals, so what's the point of the semis? But again, people start forgetting that this is entertainment. This is why sponsors put money into events, because they want semi-final, final weekend. That's good exposure for their brands. Without the sponsor, there's no tournament.
Correct. And if it wasn't a semi-final, they wouldn't have watched. That's it. It's a knockout game. A knockout game. Add spice. It's entertainment. It should be there. I like it.
Well, it is, and it is the 2 best teams. So I kind of feel like in past years, you've always had one team that dominates. It was the Cheetahs before they had to then play another tournament. The Sharks have taken up that role now. They've only lost twice this year in regulation play, but their last win kind of, you got to concede the fact that they're already qualified for a home semi. I don't know if they were completely focused, although you should always put your best into the field. Sharks versus Province, some interesting backline kind of matchups here. But again, it's nice to see that there is some exciting talent come up. You mentioned a few names that can be thought about for the Bok to interview a tour. But are we then getting ahead of ourselves again and thinking, well, we've seen it in domestic cricket. A guy can take loads of wickets, score loads of runs, plays to the Proteas, bugger all. Because the level, the gap in level between the Currie Cup or domestic cricket in this respect is so much inferior to international level. Do you find that's a bit harsh on the guys who are putting their sort of bodies on the line week in, week out?
No, not really. It's just a reality of international sport that. And you can't say unless you put them to, or lift them to a higher level, whether they'll make it or not. That's why I think it shouldn't be necessarily who has played the best for the longest period, let's reward him. Let's call it a Vernon Philander selection. It can work sometimes, but then you do the what they've done now with Mulder and with Markram in the cricket side. The guy gets chosen on potential, and you make him learn the skills to survive at international level, yeah, at international level. And against the best, from the best coaches. And certain players just should get that treatment. And the names I mentioned earlier, there's a couple more. Pull them in, make them part of the squad, make them start dream, make them bring some energy in there. Why not?
If you're not going to bowl, you achieve nothing in life. Not going to be bold, sorry. Just getting to the actual nuts and bolts of it. Is it going to be a pretty straightforward Sharks win? Not straightforward, but I mean they're very much overwhelming favourites.
It's going to be an interesting match again. The thing the Sharks had going for them all season was that juggernaut scrum of theirs. Nobody could take it on. And the province Fronto can actually live with them. And Thomas Letuai was destructive, but so is Wilco Lowe. So you've got that clash there. And if the Sharks can get the upper hand there, I can't see them lose, because they play a very conservative game behind that monster pack. But province can actually live with them there. And then if they do, if it's parity up front, I would actually rate the Western Province backline to get the better of that game.
All right. Now, obviously, with the Lions, they had their stars coming back. They used them off the bench. Swayze was doing something of the week around the front row, and it backfired terribly. I see Province haven't utilized their box. Is this going to be, I mean, is there a reason behind this? Is it a contractual thing? Is it a management thing?
Yeah, no, it's simply contract. The contracted box can't play. What is strange is that a guy like Sinatla could play, because he's actually also contracted, if not with the Springboks, then with Springbok 7. So it seems to have been kind of selective from SA Rugby side. They didn't want the real stars, the core players to play, and mostly they managed not to do that. Coming back to the Lions game and Swayze, what he did there, it's the old Dick Muir trick, isn't it? Changed his lineup three times just before kickoff. I mean, his own players didn't know whether they're playing or not, and you don't achieve anything with it. You certainly don't scare opponents trying to do that. All you're showing is weakness. You're saying, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what my best team is. And, you know, you kill your own confidence. I don't know why they did that. And then, in his mind, he thought it's going to be a masterstroke bringing in that bench so early, that front row. And all of it backfired. And where a stock standard game could have worked.
Yeah, exactly. Just on the whole thing about Western Province, and again, selective contractual kind of thing, Damien Donnelly hasn't played that much this season. When he has, he looked a bit rough, a bit rusty. He got sent off against the All Blacks for what has been deemed just careless, nothing more than that. Province have got a centre problem, and he's not playing.
I don't think they have a problem. I think Hugh Jones is brilliant.
but Ivi Filion's injured.
Yes.
But, so he's out.
But now they've got Dan Drillback, who can also play in centre, and you can always bring in Ronald to centre. They're fine.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you want a guy that's going to be in the box squads, not just, you know, be put in cobwebs and that kind of stuff. Is this not an opportunity for, again, just some logic to come through here and say, you haven't played much this season, you've had your injury concerns, so I mean you've been off both reasons. Now you've been contracted out of actual game time, which could serve your purpose. I mean, again, like, who would it essentially make that call? Is it all Saru, or is it the union itself at Western Province?
I think the Springbok management makes that call. And in this case, it could be, yes, common sense would say, let's make him play. But then he was starting to make exceptions, and they don't want to be seen to make exceptions with their core contracted players. Could Damien have played? Yes. Will he have added something? I don't know. I don't know if he's that much better than the guys I've got there.
Well, there's also that. I mean, there's very much that point as well. Some would argue that he isn't. Right, we need to just talk about Rugby 2023. So we all know that, for some strange reason, or maybe there's not so many strange reasons, South Africa had a fantastic World Cup in 1995, and we are now sitting here at 2017 hoping we can somehow have it again in 2023. Since then, New Zealand's had it twice. Sorry, they've had it again, because they've had it twice in total. England, they seem to have all these events all the time and lose track of this kind of stuff. Australia, of course, have been in the mix more than South Africa. So it just seems strange. Like, why would a team that's got everything going for it not have this again? So this time around, they're up against Ireland. Ireland, of course, never had this tournament. So there's that cause. They're also up against, was it France?
Yes.
France, of course, have had it twice, essentially. They've co-shared it. They've also hosted outright. Mm. So that's the season opposition they're up against. Much was made about the bid that happened. Saw Ramaphosa went there, although I think adding politics to sports never a good idea, but you know, you've got to have a presidential figure. And by all means, this bid went really, really well. So much so that now they've released a heartfelt, I'm going to play this for you, a heartfelt emotional video around this. Got to love it. People were making a big noise about it on Twitter recently. And before I even saw it, I could tell you that there was going to be kids running around in unison in kind of impoverished areas. You're going to see a lot of wildlife. You're going to see the Big Five. You're going to see sweeping landscapes. And you're going to see a Madiba reference. I think I got a full house. I redid. So here it is. Opens off in a township. That's the emotive background music. Sweeping landscape. Yeah, there we go. Elephant.
Lovely.
A man that appears to have murdered a leopard. And it goes on to then show more of this beautiful country, the box playing, animals fighting each other. Very emotive. Flags. We do well with flags. Small kids, because this is what it's about. It's about getting the next generation. And there's Madiba.
The 95 final has to be there.
Oh, yeah. And there's MPs. I mean, look, I don't want to sound like a cynical prick here, but it's almost like it's just so predictable. It's so, so predictable. Do you think World Rugby falls for this or cares too much about this? Because this story is being told. You know, when this all happened, I read an article about the fact that we can't keep playing this Madiba card as bullshit because the ANC has ruined this country to the point where we're a laughingstock overseas now. You used to be able to say South Africa and people would give you a thumbs up and they go, ah, Madiba, what a beautiful country. Now they go, oh, your president's a criminal. Should this be like the root? I mean, they're not crying in the anthem. Like, do you reckon this is going to sell World Rugby on giving in the bid to South Africa?
As you say, this is the stock standard way that South African tourism operates. You always show those type of things, and then playing the old emotional card. There's nothing unpredictable about it. As you say, you've got a full house before without even watching. Whether it's very honest, I don't know. I don't see any guys around a bribe of brandy and coke in the hand there.
Still not, no.
I don't see empty dams in Cape Town, you know, those type of things. But I suppose that's not how you sell. So it's not what is an honest version of what your country looks like right now. It's what they hope, what they think it could be like.
The reason I bring it up in this tone is like, what are our expectations, basically? Because Ireland are going to go in their first world, France are going to go in their first world, and they've got all their different things. Personally, cock and block, I still believe this is the best country to host a Rugby World Cup, as it is a Cricket World Cup, because of infrastructure, culture, and it's just a great place to be around and have beers and brandy and all that kind of stuff. I'm sold. I'm just thinking from like a world perspective.
I don't think Ireland's a very good call. They've never done this type of things. They don't have. They're going to have to convert a lot of football stadiums and Gaelic football stadiums into rugby hosting venues. I know, for example, that hotels are, I think, almost 90% full for the South Africa match, and that's just one game. What about having to host four on a Saturday? It's where they're going to find the space. Our bid is just so much superior. But I've heard about their video, and apparently they got all their big actors. They got
Westlife's in there, no doubt.
Liam Neeson in there, and all staying in America, and can't even speak with Irish accents anymore. But they got a very professional video. But it's not about videos. It's about what can we actually do? What's the fan experience? And I think the big strength of our bid is the rand. So you can spend so much more here, have a much better time for the same amount of money, and be unique. It's nothing for Europeans to go travel to Europe. Irish fans to go to France, they do it often. French fans to go to the UK, it's a very, whereas anybody coming to Africa is always going to be special. I think we have a good chance. I think Ireland did maybe a little better at pulling at the emotional strings than we did. But I think if they're going to sit down and make – you don't want to give it to France again. They had it just the other day.
Yeah.
So it's going to be between us and Ireland. And then I think we got the technically far superior bit.
Okay. I agree with everything you just said. And if it were down on it, I would vote SA. Let's go with that. Best place to do it. Now, SA Rugby has some controversial videos from time to time with a guy called Ryan Frieder. I'm sure you're very good friends with him.
Yes, good friend of mine.
Now, what I like about Ryan, and I mean, I like a variety of people online, mostly because, like, I got into sport purely because I was a fan with a phone. So I've learned from a variety of people, and I believe in contrast. What Ryan seems to always do, I don't know if this is an intentional thing or he's just quite a contrary individual. Anyway, I like his stuff because he'll find popular opinion and he will piss on it to the extent where people get angry, get really, really angry. You should see the comments of the video I'm about to play for you now. But what I do like about it is that everything we've discussed now, we're in agreement here. But what are the counter thoughts to that? And I think this video provides quite a few counter thoughts on why SA shouldn't host the Rugby 2023 World Cup.
And this is going to set the trolls off again. I worked at Newlands during the 1995 World Cup. The job paid peanuts, but as a rugby mad kid, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. I've been to major tournaments across various codes, but that World Cup remains the single most memorable sporting event I've ever been to. But I don't want to relive it, and here's why. One, you can't recreate the unifying effect that tournament had. Those arguing for the tournament on those grounds are deeply optimistic. The socio-political landscape was right for it to happen at the time. It isn't now. You can't plant oak seeds in gravel and expect it to grow. Two, it's a slap in the face to the poor. There's something fundamentally wrong and grotesque about hosting a tournament that 70 to 80% of your population are excluded from attending because of ticket prices. Now got the rich and entitled douches sitting up and listening. The suits will spin some bullshit about affordable tickets being made available to the public, but that's all a ruse. Already people are being priced out of the market, the vast majority of South African rugby supporters. How much more so in 2023? Three, you don't entrust treasures to clowns. It would be criminal of world rugby to reward a country whose game is crippled by administrative dysfunction and clear incompetence with a game showpiece tournament. SA Rugby and its provincial affiliates struggle to function at even a base expectation for professional businesses. Imagine the mess they'd make with the cash injection they'd get from a tournament of this nature. It'd be like giving the keys of a Bugatti to a drunkard. I could list 15 to 20 reasons why this tournament shouldn't happen, but I think my point is clear. Just don't do it.
Okay, so, well, look, a lot of people will be against it because you can't talk against popular vote in this country. People do, I mean, even if your rights are wrong, they'll shout you down online. Ryan's point there about number three, basically about rewarding just dreadful ineptness in the administration, that kind of stuff. I believe he's got an argument in there. But my counter to that would be, it's like, okay, we know things haven't been going so great here. Like the whole circus to the, like, treasure to the clowns thing. Cool, I agree with you there. But do you think that events, I mean, we're not going to make a lot of progress unless we have events like the World Cup. So, you know, we can take this moral high horse of view, like, we don't deserve it. But we'd also like looking at a gift horse in the mouth by saying, well, all this money that could be coming in, I mean, we can't be that negative, can we?
No, we can't at all. Let's discuss that point of view that we are apparently so inept administratively. No, we are not. We are one of the best hosts in World Rugby. I was at Cape Town Sevens last year, where the World Rugby representative told me Hong Kong has nothing on Cape Town.
No, I get that point. I think what he's alluding to is the fact that there's been so much mismanagement and so much political bungling of rugby in general in this country that shouldn't be rewarded. I think that's the point he's going for.
Not when we host. We are actually very professional hosts. I was down in Cape Town. He says he's got memories from Newlands. He wasn't. How can he can't say, you know, that they really bungled up everything. Why wasn't he there? If you were there and they did something wrong, then, you know, complain about it then. Don't sit on your high horse, not be at the places and tell us what to think of what happened in the places. No, go. Come to Sevens, tell me we can't host. Go to Sevens, tell me I administered too bad we are. Then, listen, we've got problems. There are problems. But that does not mean you have to take possible economic decisions, things that can bring in a lot of money to our country, and use that to to somehow force them not to make mistakes again, or to use that to punish them. You know, we'll take it away. It's not up to World Rugby to punish or to discipline bad administration.
Yeah, see, like ultimately, I'm more inclined to what you're saying here is that, if, okay, you know, try to punish someone on a moral level, but where is that going to get us? It's a slippery slope, but it's always good to get counter opinions here. Anyway, we are running out of time. Munir, bye, thank you for your time again. Your insights and views are right down the middle and pretty solid. And that's something I always think. When you see sensationalism and people losing their minds, I always like to go into your tweets because you kind of hit the nail on the head a lot of the time. And look, I just think there is a lot to be positive still. And as you say, you know, maybe we shouldn't look to all the negatives and try to find a story. This whole thing with administrative bungling stuff. We do pretty well with the sevens. We've done pretty well with every time we host something. I think if we go out of Sanzar, the rest of them are screwed.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there's also that. If we go up to Europe, New Zealanders and Australians can't... That Bledisloe Cup game that was so amazing didn't have 1 million viewers over the weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, that they don't have a big game. So that is definitely true. I wonder if you don't mind, I just want to get back to the last point because I think that's quite important. Saying that ticket prices are too high and that it's unfair on poor people not to be able to attend. Well, all sport work like that.
Yeah, I didn't even bother acknowledging that because that is a world event.
Yeah. And all sport, please tell Arsenal fans that the poor Arsenal fans can't go watch. It's just not going to happen. If it's popular enough, then you can. It's entertainment, you pay for it.
It's a global event. Mm. It's not a high school rugby match.
Correct.
So we're gonna cut it off there, actually. That was our rugby chat. On Twitter, at JW Kutsia, that's where you'll find my esteemed guest today. Otherwise, where else can we find your work online?
I'm working most of my writings on supersport.com. It'll pick up a little end of year. We do live blogs for all the major events, and then my regular column will kick in when Super Rugby starts.
All right, Super Rugby. It's already kind of around the corner. Well, not really, but essentially. This week I am in Rwanda, so if you follow me on Twitter, at FollowTheBounce, I'm going to Rwanda for a cricket trip, of all cricket trips. So I don't know if you know too much about Rwanda, but back in the 90s there was some genocides on the go there, and it's not particularly a nice topic of conversation, but the country has come a long way since then. More than 1 million people were massacred for some sort of tribal beliefs that, I mean, I don't want to get into. That was the nuts and bolts of it. The Hutus and the Tutsis didn't see eye to eye, but cricket is kind of repairing some bonds. So what is happening in Rwanda right now, just outside of Kigali where I'm going, they've created this world-class cricket facility. It really is quite something. And there's an entire week of festivities around this, then culminating in a celebrity match with some international cricketers. So I'm involved in that match. If you follow me on social media, I'll update you as much as I can. And then this time next week, for the Bounce Show itself, I'll get into my time there. Very, very interesting time. Great opportunity for me to get out there and see more of the African continent, of course, and how great sport can be to places that need it, which I believe is everywhere. That's pretty much it. Go Province. I'm still a Province fan deep down. Although,
go Sharks.
If I can find, it's just because they beat the Bulls. If I can find a place to watch the game in Kigali, that in itself will make my year.
Well, enjoy. Let's hope you best of luck there.
All right, thanks very much. Catch you back on the Bounce Show next week. Otherwise, next week as well, back to business with the Gareth Cliff Show here on cliffcentral.com. 6 until 9 in the morning. That'll be South African time, of course. Thanks a lot. Ciao.
This is cliffcentral.com.